Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today we're getting into a topic that really, it sits right at the intersection of public health and, frankly, your personal finances. We're talking about personal healthcare literacy.
Right. And it's so much more than just, you know, being able to read a pamphlet from the doctor's office. It's your total ability to find, to understand, and then this is the key part, to effectively use healthcare information and all the services out there.
So it's basically the engine that drives all your informed health decisions. It covers everything from, I guess, the basics all the way to decoding some really complex medical jargon.
And that word you just used, decoding, that is exactly why this deep dive is so, so important. I mean, if you've ever felt like navigating the healthcare system requires some kind of specialized degree, you are definitely not alone.
I think we've all been there.
Oh, absolutely. And our sources confirm this with a, frankly, a startling statistic. It comes from the National Assessment of Adult Literacy, or NAL. It found that only 12% of Americans have proficient health literacy skills.
Wow. Only 12%. Just let that sink in for a moment.
It's staggering. It means that nearly 9 out of 10 adults struggle. And not with small things. They struggle with what we all assume are just routine health tasks. Things like trying to understand a complex drug label, you know, with all the side effects and warnings, or they can't follow a detailed multi-step set of instructions for a prescription.
And I imagine just figuring out what's a credible source online versus what's, you know, just noise.
That's a huge one. Yeah.
That 12% statistic, I think that's the core of our mission today. It totally reframes this whole topic. It stops being a nice-to-have skill and becomes a systemic national challenge. But for you, our listener, getting better at this translates into some incredible immediate benefits. We're talking about avoiding unnecessary spending, staying healthy proactively, and just having the confidence to advocate for yourself in a doctor's office. Okay, let's unpack this. I think we need to start by building a framework.
I agree. To really get the scope of the challenge, we have to look at the benchmark researchers use.
Yeah.
The NAL, it defined four distinct categories of health literacy. And this framework is essential because it shows us exactly where the system, well, where it begins to fail people.
Okay, so let's start at the top, the ideal. Tell us about the proficient level.
Right. So individuals who are classified as proficient, these are the true navigators of the system. They have the cognitive skills to perform the most complex, the most challenging literacy tasks. They can take really detailed written materials, like, say, a study comparing two different heart medications, and they can synthesize information from different places, make complex inferences, and then actually apply that knowledge to their own care.
So they really understand the why behind their treatment.
Precisely. Which makes them incredibly effective at sticking to even the most complex treatment plans.
That sounds like a really empowered position to be in. Okay, so moving down from there, we have the intermediate level.
The intermediate level is still quite strong. These individuals, they can read and understand moderately complex healthcare documents. They're good at pulling out relevant information and, you know, drawing reasonable conclusions.
Like reading a chart on a drug label.
Exactly. Or maybe understanding the difference between a PPO and an HMO insurance plan. They can generally navigate the healthcare world, but they might need a minute to process some of the more technical details.
Okay, so now we have to shift our focus because we're now talking about the vast majority of the population, that 88% who fall below those top two tiers. This is where you said navigation really starts to break down. Let's talk about the basic level.
Right. So at the basic level, people can handle simple, everyday literacy tasks. They can read short health articles, little brochures, basic pamphlets, that kind of thing. They usually have some understanding of common conditions, you know, the difference between a cold and the flu.
But there's a catch.
There is. The sources are very clear. The moment the information becomes complex, when it introduces detailed steps, complicated concepts, or long treatment plans, they struggle. That complexity is their biggest hurdle.
And then we get to the category that shows the deepest challenges, which is below basic.
This group has very limited literacy skills, to the point where some people might be non-literate. Their ability is really limited to, say, finding one piece of information in a document, like the date on a hospital form, or maybe doing very simple math, like adding up how many pills to take.
Just the absolute bare minimum.
Yes. They can maybe follow a very short set of instructions right before an exam. And the definition the sources use here is, well, it's dark. It says this level of literacy is significantly lower than what is necessary to navigate the healthcare environment.
So they're basically set up for failure from the get-go.
From the moment they're handed a discharge paper, yes.
That framing, set up for failure, feels critical. It shifts the blame from the person to the system. Okay, so these four levels, they show us the scope of the problem. The next logical step is to figure out why. Why do so many people get stuck? What are the big barriers our sources found?
Well, the first barrier we really have to talk about isn't just about reading. It's a problem of numeracy.
Ah, so difficulty with numbers.
Exactly. Difficulty solving problems that involve quantitative information.
And the sources really single this one out as unique. Why is struggling with numbers maybe even more damaging than just general reading problems when you're talking to a doctor?
Because so much of healthcare is built on numbers. And we're not talking about, advanced math. It's basic comparison, proportional thinking. A problem with numeracy directly impacts your ability to compare risk. Is a 1 in 10,000 risk better or worse than a 1 in 100 risk?
Right, or calculating a dose for a child based on their weight.
A perfect example, and maybe the most common one. It makes evaluating insurance plans totally impossible. If you don't really grasp what a deductible or coinsurance is, you are flying blind when it comes to your own financial risk.
And that financial literacy is tied directly to your health outcome.
Okay, so shifting gears a bit, the second barrier is pure reading difficulties.
Right, and this goes back to, having a limited vocabulary or just being unfamiliar with core health concepts. And this barrier often intersects with other challenges. The sources point out that people with existing visual or cognitive impairments are, naturally more likely to face these kinds of reading and processing challenges.
It just compounds the problem.
It really does. If reading a novel is already hard, trying to interpret a technical medical document is going to be doubly difficult.
Then we've got one the industry kind of created itself. Complicated concepts and jargon. Oh, yes. I mean, every field has its own language.
Right.
But healthcare seems particularly saturated with it. Just think about a discharge summary that uses words like idiopathic or contraindicated or mentions a subcutaneous injection.
Without a science background, those are just walls.
They are. They're cognitive walls.
Yeah.
The sheer volume of jargon in these complex layered systems makes it so hard to really grasp what you're being told. It's like a language barrier, even when it's in your own language.
Okay, and the fourth barrier is a very modern one, technology.
This is a huge challenge for certain groups, especially older adults or people who don't have reliable internet access or just aren't familiar with digital devices.
As everything moves online, patient portals, scheduling apps.
Telehealth, right. If you don't have that digital access or just as importantly, that confidence, you're effectively locked out. The very tools designed to make things easier become the new roadblock.
So we've covered these sort of structural and cognitive hurdles, but this is where the sources took a really interesting turn into something more emotional, embarrassment. That's the fifth barrier, and it's self-imposed.
And it's such a powerful silence saboteur. I mean, talking about health issues, especially sensitive topics like sexual health or mental health, it causes real discomfort for a lot of people.
Yeah.
And that embarrassment, it acts like a brake. It can stop people from even seeking medical advice in the first place.
Or if they do get in the room with a doctor, it stops them from asking the clarifying questions they need to ask.
That's the killer. They feel self-conscious. They worry about looking unintelligent. So they nod along. They say yes when they really mean, I have no idea what you're talking about.
And they miss out on the one educational opportunity they really needed.
Precisely. They walk out of the office with a plan they can't possibly follow, and the foundation for failure is set.
That lack of communication takes us straight to the stakes. Because low health literacy isn't just a passive state, it's an active problem. It's directly linked to specific negative outcomes. What are the measurable consequences here?
The studies are really unambiguous on this. Low health literacy leads to poor overall physical and mental health. It severely limits a person's ability to understand how to manage a chronic disease like diabetes or high blood pressure. And critically, it leads to much lower adherence to their medication and their care plans.
And the cost is huge, right? For the person and the whole system. The sources lay out this whole cascade of negative outcomes. Which one do you think is the most financially damaging for the average person?
The inability to predict costs is a big one. But I think the most damaging behavior is the over-reliance on the most expensive parts of the system. People with low health literacy are far more likely to use the emergency room for conditions that really should have been managed in a primary care office.
Because they just don't know where else to go.
They don't know where to go, or they wait too long because they didn't understand how serious their symptoms were in the first place.
So they end up paying more for that ER visit, and they miss out on that lower cost preventative care.
Exactly. And on top of that, they often struggle with the system's complexity, so they might see the wrong specialist, which means unnecessary costs and delays. They just end up paying more for healthcare overall because they don't understand basic things like pre-authorization or using in-network providers.
And then when we look at the direct health effects, the results are pretty severe.
They are. They often fail to follow their provider's directions, which, you know, naturally leads to poorer lifestyle choices and missed chances for early intervention.
And there was one specific metric that was really chilling, the link to hospital readmissions.
Yes. Individuals with low health literacy are significantly more likely to be readmitted to the hospital within 30 days of being discharged.
Let's just spend a second on that 30-day readmission point. We talked about that below basic group who struggles with simple instructions. It seems so predictable that this group would be the one to fail when they get home. Why is that failure so, I guess, baked into the system?
Because post-discharge instructions are arguably the most complicated, high-stakes communication in the entire healthcare journey. They're highly detailed, often written at a high reading level, and they require complex sequencing. Take drug A at this time, check your blood pressure twice a day, call this number if you see these three symptoms, go to a follow-up appointment in 5 days.
It's a waterfall of information.
It is. And if you struggled with basic math or jargon in the first place, that cascade is just, it's overwhelming. The high readmission rate isn't a failure of the medical treatment, it's a failure of information transfer.
That really underscores the urgency. Okay, we have the framework, we have the barriers, we have the consequences. Let's pivot to the solution. The sources give us 8 really powerful, actionable strategies you can use right now to take charge of your health.
And these are so important because improving your healthcare literacy is absolutely within your control if you're willing to do a little self-advocacy.
Okay, let's group the first 3 around that critical, often rushed 15 minutes you get with a provider. It's all about preparation and clarity. Number 1, prepare before you visit.
This means sitting down beforehand, listing out your specific concerns, prioritizing them. But the most critical part is committing to taking notes during the appointment. Don't rely on your memory. It's a high-stress situation. Write it down. Names, dosages, next steps.
2nd, and this one directly fights that embarrassment barrier. Ask questions and clarify.
You have to be assertive. If a provider uses a word you don't know or a concept is confusing, you have to stop them. Ask them to rephrase it. Ask them to use simpler, everyday language. You have a right to understand your own healthcare plan.
And 3rd in this group, request specific materials.
Right. Don't just settle for verbal instructions, especially if you know you're a visual learner. Ask your provider for visual aids diagrams, brochures, videos, anything to help you digest the information after you've left the office.
Even just having them draw it for you.
Absolutely. Whatever it takes.
Okay. That group is about in-the-moment communication. The next cluster of tips is about external support, recognizing that you can learn outside the clinic. Tip 4 is so practical. Bring a friend or a loved one to your appointment.
This is such a great idea. It's immediate support. That person is a second pair of ears. They can take notes, they can track the conversation, and maybe most importantly, they can ask the questions that you might forget to ask because you're feeling anxious.
5th is to attend health education events.
Look for free activities. Local health fairs, webinars from hospitals, public lectures. These places often have interactive learning, and they give you advice from experts in a much less intimidating setting.
And 6th, kind of along the same lines, is to join community programs.
Yeah, a lot of organizations run health workshops, and sometimes they use materials tailored for specific communities, which is great. They offer expert and relatable insight, which makes these big topics feel a lot more accessible.
Our final group of tips deals with that flood of digital information, the technology barrier. Mm. So 7th, you have to be a discerning media consumer.
This is all about critical thinking. You have to be so cautious about information you see on social media, on TV shows, or just from a random internet search. So much of that information is incomplete, or it's out of context, or it's just plain wrong.
So the rule of thumb is, always verify.
Always. Verify anything you learn from a non-professional source with your actual healthcare provider before you act on it.
And finally, 8, use technology to manage your health. Technology can be a barrier, but it can also be a huge resource.
Oh, for sure. You can utilize all the reliable apps and official websites that are out there. Use them for tracking medications, looking up symptoms from a reputable source, or just booking appointments. Many platforms now have tools that are specifically designed to use plain language, which helps you get around some of those jargon barriers automatically.
That is a really powerful set of strategies. So Healthcare literacy is clearly essential for your well-being, for preventing disease, and for protecting your wallet. So what does this all mean? The sources suggest a really great first step for anyone who's employed is to check with HR or your manager, see what kind of healthcare resources or training might already be available right there in your own organization.
And that organizational check? That's the bridge. It's the bridge between what you can do as an individual and what needs to change in the system. We started this by saying 88% of the population is not proficient. That points to a massive failure of communication on a huge scale.
Right. It's not an individual problem.
No. And so given how common low health literacy is, we have to ask ourselves, what mandatory systemic or workplace supports, beyond just, you know, telling people to take notes, are actually necessary? How do our organizations and our entire healthcare system make sure that people in those basic or below basic levels have immediate, mandated access to the resources they need to overcome their specific challenges like numeracy or technology access or just the fear of asking a question? That is the foundational challenge we have to solve next.